Well, I got the idea of a good deal of encouragement through in the possibilities of high purity by having worked on vacuum tubes prior to working on semiconductors. Mm-hmm. And of course they went to a high vacuum, and a lot of improvements were developed by going to high vacuum. I think I say that in one of these, let's see, what's this
page? I think it's in this one, yeah. Yeah.
You said that you have a copy of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Here, with the previously discussed materials and devices background and detailed knowledge from extensive reading of earlier research papers as well as more recent ones, 1925 to 1933, of Irving Langmuir, GE Company, and Harold E. Arnold, Bell Telephone Laboratories, and of articles concerning the long court fight waged between GE and Bell over GE patenting of a ultra-high vacuum in a vacuum tube, I was impressed by the tremendous impact of high, ultra-high vacuum, not only on the beneficial operating characteristics and practicality of vacuum tubes, but also by its ability to simplify the interaction of the functioning of a design, thereby enhancing the designability of vacuum tubes to perform specific functions. Personal experience with gassy phototubes, electron multipliers, and pickup devices made me especially conscious of the difficulties of relating theoretically expected and actual electron ballistics in a vacuum tube device in which there might be present an unspecified number of unknown and unexpected electrical carriers, in addition to the anticipated electron. Such a situation could easily thwart to the development of the science of a solid-state electronic device and realization of its maximum potentiality. The transistor invention of Bell Labs in late 47 convinced me that this was definitely the time to get back on germanium work, in spite of my important challenging assignment of handling the chemical development of a silicon carbide varistor for a new telephone handset. My most enthusiastic thoughts were on the potential of germanium and what I might do about it. I reasoned that removing the crystal boundaries and other undesirable defects from germanium would probably be as important to the transistor as removing the last traces of gases from the vacuum tube. While I continued my assigned work on silicon carbide varistors for the telephone handset, I was determined also to get back into germanium research. Nothing that occurred to me seemed to have the potentialities as important as those of high purity, high perfection, single crystals of germanium. Well, that's the sort of the large part of the gist of why it was so damn important to me.
But
nothing that occurred to me seemed to have the potentialities as important as those of high purity, high perfection, single crystal germanium. A number of times over the years, as one of my early jobs, making single crystals from mercuric iodide solutions, I had thought that it would be interesting to pull a single crystal of germanium, but I had never had an adequate reason to do so. But now I had. The method intrigued me, not only because I thought it would be interesting to pull a single crystal of germanium, but because it was not a method in use at the time, nor one tagged as a metallurgical method that I would have to yield to someone else as their method.
You say that now you had a reason to do it, and I guess that reason, you say elsewhere that it was because you were talking with Little about work that he was doing.
Yeah. Late one afternoon, around quitting time, I encountered John Little, and we got to talking about our work. He started by telling me how he needed a germanium and at a germanium rod small enough in diameter to be cut by a very small wheel, in order to minimize waste. I could see that here was an opportunity to make a rod for someone who had a real job to do. So as we were getting on the bus for Summit, New Jersey, I said, "Sure, I can make you a rod by pulling one out of a germanium melt, and incidentally, it will be a single crystal, too." As soon as we got on the bus, we started sketching. All we needed was something that would pull the rod out smoothly and would withstand the heat. A graphite crucible seemed a suitable vessel in which to melt germanium, and a clock mechanism would serve to smoothly lift the rod through from the surface of the melt. John had a bell jar about 30 inches high, which was part of a large high-frequency heater he used for testing experimental vacuum tube parts. The high-frequency heater coil was well up inside, and the bell jar, which was filled with hydrogen, introduced at the top, and the excess flowing out the bottom and into the ventilating system of the room, the flow of excess being adjusted sufficiently high to keep oxygen or other contaminating gas away from the heated crucible and rod above the crucible. This would suffice for growing crystals within a hydrogen atmosphere. By the end of the 3-mile ride into Summit, we had sketched the equipment, and 2 days later, on October the 1st, 1948, we had completed our crude machine. in John's lab in New York City and pulled our first single crystals of germanium. We did this without getting anyone's permission or approval and acted only on our own personal ideas. Most of the simple handling and measurement on these crystals were made by two Kelly College men who were moving through the various parts of the Bell Lab to learn about the labs as a whole before settling down to a specific job in a specific department. These two men were electrical engineers. I couldn't afford to spend much of my regular time on the single crystal since I was expected by my department to devote the major part of my time to my officially assigned job on chemical aspects of silicon carbide varistors for a new telephone handset. About 2 months after John Little and I made our first germanium crystals in December 1948, I went to Jack Morton and suggested that a single crystal program on germanium and silicon be set up. I spelled out the various details of the program and asked him to supply some funds for John Little and me to get the program started by first building a small duplicate bell jar type of puller equipment that could be set up in my laboratory on the third floor of the building, of Building 1 in Murray Hill. My main justification for the program that I was suggesting was to supply a more uniform semiconducting material for large-scale manufacture. Jack, in agreeing to pay for the construction of the equipment, said, "Gordon, you will get the scientific credit for this." I interpret this as his acknowledgement at that time that I was providing by my recent growth of germanium single crystals and by my personal suggestions a likely solution to one of his major problems, lack of a uniform semiconducting material for a large-scale manufacture of devices.